Supplying liquidity is an investment, and we need to treat it accordingly. Like lending money or buying stock, investors commit capital for a period and expect a return that increases over time. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And the roughly 500 reads on this show is my proof of work. We've got an awesome one for today. We are digging into the economics of the Lightning Network and specifically inbound liquidity for users and nodes on the network. This is a great one by the very team that coined LSP, Lightning Service Provider, if I remember correctly. That is Breeze Technology and their CEO, Roy Scheinfeld. We've done a bunch of their stuff on the show because I'm a huge fan of both their Lightning wallet and the stuff, the writing that they do. And with Strike having like arrived on the scene like a nuclear bomb already making huge waves, the future of Lightning looks incredible. In fact, I took a break from recording this and I literally bought $30 worth. I sent straight from my bank account to Strike and then from Strike to my Breeze wallet while I was reading this article, which I didn't actually even do on purpose. Like, I wasn't even thinking about it like that. I was just like, man, I'm feeling like super bullish. I got to buy $30 worth. And then after I was like, oh shit, I just used Strike and Breeze, which is exactly what I ranted about in the guy's take here. So a quick thank you before we get into it to our two lovely sponsors for the show. We have Level.co, the mobile Bitcoin integrated banking services and exchange. It is literally a Bitcoin exchange that does not have exchange fees. And you get a direct deposit, wire and ACH transfers, a debit card, literally the works. So check them out at guyswan.com/level. And then, of course, you need your savings. You need your cold storage. And for that, you want a secure, open source, and importantly, easy to use hardware wallet. That is the Bitbox O2 by Shift Crypto. Check them out at guyswan.com/bitbox for more info. With that, it is time to get into today's read and the rather lengthy guys take rant about how much I love Lightning. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. For now, today's article, and it's titled Lightning Economics: How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love Inbound Liquidity, by Roy Scheinfeld. When mastering a skill, the more difficult aspects of growing and learning often feel like tedious distractions. Running scales on a guitar might feel like a diversion from really playing, and beating eggs might feel very far from haughty cuisine. But it's vitally important to get those early steps right. It's only with hindsight, upon achieving mastery, that what seemed to be standing in the way of progress is revealed to be, like, the key to everything. B.B. King is just scales and soul, and well-beaten eggs are the foundation and essence of a good souffle. Like a budding chef or musician, Lightning is also maturing, and we're all learning how to master it. The intermediate step that currently seems like a distraction, but that in time will reveal itself to be the key to everything, is inbound liquidity. And like scales or stiff peaks, we will all love inbound liquidity once we've mastered this network. Inbound liquidity has been declared a problem by some, and some others, and some others. I can see where they're coming from. But inbound liquidity is only a problem if you start from the assumption that custodial models are the default and that our goal is to replicate them. However, if you adjust your perspective such that custodial models are an abomination and our goal is to supersede them, then inbound liquidity becomes a thing of beauty. It's like sore muscles after a workout. It's proof that the work is paying off and that the system is working. To induce the necessary perspective adjustment, let me quickly recap the architecture of Lightning, explain the role and economics of inbound liquidity, and then describe some different ways to monetize it and why it's a necessary, beautiful component of our bigger, transformative whole. Lightning Redux. Back to the abacus. To understand the centrality of inbound liquidity, let's review the structure of Lightning. Lightning is composed of nodes connected by payment channels. Payment channels are like the wires of an abacus, with the beads representing satoshis. But Lightning is like a hyper-abacus, in that several wires or payment channels may connect any two nodes, and all the nodes in the network are connected one way or another by chains of wires and nodes. Now, a vital, central, crucial point is that moving beads along a wire from one node to another, i.e. an off-chain transaction, is very cheap. But adding and removing beads from wires, or transferring them between wires, on-chain transactions, are costly. So, in order to work as designed, Lightning needs to move beads from one end of the network to the other over an indeterminate number of nodes and wires, while avoiding any change to the number of beads on any wire. The trick is to induce a chain reaction of transfers. Let's assume ubiquitous Alice wants to send a payment to inescapable Carol. While they don't share a payment channel, they each share a channel with omnipresent Bob. Carol, the recipient, requests payment from Alice via invoice. Alice sends her satoshis to Bob, and Bob accepts her satoshis on one channel before forwarding the same quantity outwards on another channel he shares with Carol. Crucially, no satoshis were added to or removed from any channel, but the correct quantity made it quickly, cheaply, and trustlessly to the destination. Bob is the routing node. When routing nodes forward payments from one node to another, no satoshis ever switch wires. So each node in the chain needs enough liquidity on the outgoing wires to complete the next step in the chain reaction. Each incoming action causes an equal and opposite outgoing reaction, except the final receipt. This means that our hyper-abacus needs to be preloaded with plenty of liquidity to make these payments possible. Who's supplying the liquidity? Executing Lightning transactions requires the liquidity for each payment to be located on the right side of the right payment channels. If the Bitcoin is in the right place, it's because someone put it there. The ones supplying it are routing nodes, LSPs, and users. Routing node operators vest the network with capital that they could use or invest elsewhere. The capital they store in their local balances is what allows them to forward payments to the next node. An LSP is effectively a user-facing routing node. LSPs need to balance their channels with other routing nodes, and they also have to maintain enough Bitcoin in their local balances on the channels they share with users, i.e., the user's inbound liquidity, which allows the users to receive payments. True, users provide most of the liquidity required for their channels to work, especially in the case of zero-conf channels, and most of the Bitcoin is initially in the user's local balances, which is their outbound liquidity. As they spend their funds, they transfer money from their end of the channel to the LSP, and the LSP's local balance is the user's inbound liquidity. From an LSP perspective, the good news is that users gradually fund their own inbound liquidity over time. The catch is that the LSP accumulates useful, valuable capital in its local balances, but that capital is largely illiquid, locked in the channels. In that sense, inbound liquidity is asymmetric from the LSP's point of view. It is only liquid from the user's perspective. Inbound liquidity is what lets money flow on Lightning. It's what lets payments move from sender to LSP to routing node to routing node to LSP to recipient. On Lightning, liquidity means inbound liquidity. Liquidity is scarce, ergo, it is valuable. Liquidity is the scarce resource, the one that potentially limits Lightning's capacity and growth. Loading the network with Bitcoin presents an opportunity cost to LSPs, and it can be significant. APY rates in excess of 3 to 5% are not hard to find. That opportunity cost is an economic reality. Someone with spare bitcoins has a decision to make. Am I better off depositing that value with a crypto financial institution for a more or less predictable return, or setting up a routing node, connecting to others, and trying to beat that return on Lightning? Supplying liquidity is an investment, and we need to treat it accordingly. Like lending money or buying stock, investors commit capital for a period and expect a return that increases over time. From the LSP's perspective, the cost of supplying liquidity increases with the number of users and the length of time that the capital is committed to that purpose. So the returns also need to increase per user and over time. That's the formula. However, there are a few important differences between supplying liquidity and making a loan. 1. Borrowers take possession of the money loaned to them, but inbound liquidity remains with the LSP, waiting to be forwarded to the user eventually. 2. Borrowers pay interest on the loan and gradually reduce the amount of principal they owe. When supplying liquidity on Lightning, the cost to the LSP derives from the funds that the users don't possess. As users spend and add to their remote balance, the LSP has more capital locked up in their payment channels. While those funds help to process payments that the user is receiving, it is capital that the LSP has earned but cannot use. The opportunity cost of the channel rises with use. 3. Anyone with some spare cash can download a free loan agreement template and try their luck with lending. But beyond a certain level, a do-it-yourself Raspi Blitz will no longer suffice to compete as an LSP. The network of routing nodes and users will ignore an LSP that is not run professionally. A serious operation entails investment in hardware, software, and potentially staff to maintain uptime, performance, and efficient liquidity allocation. Like I said, it's an investment. Monetization models. For LSPs, supplying liquidity is an investment, not a problem. Nobody would describe buying Bitcoin or startup equity as, quote, a problem. What makes it seem problematic is that we're still devising and discovering ways to provide LSPs with returns on their investment. An example might help to clarify the cost of supplying liquidity and how different monetization models might provide them with a return. Imagine a user opens a channel with an LSP and deposits funds into their wallet. The channel mostly contains the user's own funds in their own local balance, so there's little cost to the LSP initially. As the user makes payments, liquidity accumulates on the LSP's side, but the LSP is compensated with routing fees, so that's fine too. However, if the user becomes less active, the LSP's capital remains locked in the channel without earning a return. The longer the inactivity and the higher the LSP's local balance, the higher the opportunity cost. That's the kind of situation our business models need to solve. Users need liquidity and functionality in an effortless, intuitive UX, and LSPs need ROI that reflects their costs. A few monetization models with different advantages have already emerged, and more are likely to come. 1. Subscription. The first monetization model is based on subscriptions, just like movies, music, and cat food nowadays. In this model, users pay their LSP a monthly fee, and in return, the LSP supplies them with a corresponding channel capacity. Sphinx, for example, charges users as little as 0.5% of their channel capacity per month. As with bandwidth from an ISP, higher capacities mean higher nominal fees, but at lower rates. Despite their familiarity and popularity with end users and providers alike, Subscription models have a couple of disadvantages. They don't adapt smoothly to actual usage patterns, and they're really based on channel capacity, not inbound liquidity. Channel capacity is the sum of the balances on each end. This difference is important because users could, in effect, be paying for liquidity in their own local balance, which is their outbound liquidity, their own money. Naturally, users should only pay for the liquidity that someone else, their LSP, supplies. 2. Leasing. Those with Bitcoin to spare can lease it to those who need it for a fixed period at a predetermined rate using smart contracts. This is the model behind Lightning Pool, for example, which uses an auction mechanism to adjust the rental price of Bitcoin to the demand for liquidity. Those who need it most will submit the highest bids, guaranteeing its providers the highest available return. Again, leasing is a fairly blunt instrument in that it reacts relatively slowly to changes in usage patterns, and it increases capacity without simultaneously allocating the liquidity between the two balances on a channel optimally. 3. Routing fees. With routing fees, LSPs charge a fixed fee plus a percentage of each transaction they forward. By indigenizing the incentives to payments moving over the network anyway, this model is arguably truest to Lightning's purpose as a payment network and its goal of liquefying Bitcoin. It's also cheap for the users, and the cost adapts automatically to their usage patterns. While an intuitively attractive solution, routing fees have a practical problem. They're too low, perhaps just a few dollars a day for major routing nodes. As Lightning's throughput increases, such low fees could remain economical thanks to much higher volumes, but we're not there yet. Routing fees need to incentivize LSPs today and every day until Lightning goes mainstream. Yes, liquidity is a scarce resource, but that's what economics is all about. It's not a problem. The business models simply have to reflect the market forces at play, and then software and the market will let Bitcoin flow freely to its most efficient use before flowing on again. The network is bootstrapping. It's cool. Nurture a growing network. To recap, the structure and design of Lightning requires liquidity to work. Liquidity is a scarce resource whose suppliers need a return. But that quid pro quo is proof that Lightning is working as an extension of Bitcoin, not a bastardization. So how can we feed the network and foster its growth sustainably? Mobile full nodes and a fully decentralized network will be a reality one day. Until then, LSPs are a necessary component of a distributed network. Active users plus solvent LSPs equals a healthy growing network. In order to maintain a healthy population of LSPs on the network, routing payments and supplying liquidity must turn a profit. Cash flow is quite literally what Lightning is all about. And like everyone, we LSPs just need a little more cash flowing in than is flowing out or stationary. Part of the equation, then, is to compensate LSPs for supplying a scarce resource. The other part is preventing that cash from becoming stationary. We do that by closing inactive channels. Closing inactive channels. Pruning a tree helps it to devote its resources to the fruit instead of to unproductive outgrowths, improving the quantity and quality of the harvest. Intelligent pruning actually fosters growth. In order to encourage people to use Lightning actively and to allow us to allocate our liquidity more efficiently, we're planning some judicious pruning. In effect, we need to watch which users are helping us and the network to grow more carefully. If a user has been inactive for 45 days, we might opt to close their channels, depending on the general status of our liquidity and the liquidity state of each specific inactive channel. Doing so will allow us to provide optimal liquidity to users who need it. There are a few important points to note about closing inactive channels. 1. It's not free for either party. Whoever opens a channel pays the fee for closing it, and we as an LSP open channels for our users automatically, so we also pay the closing fee. Users' residual balances are swept from the closed channel to an on-chain address the Breeze wallet generates. Users will incur a fee to retrieve them. This retrieval fee is, however, avoidable. Breeze will notify users after 30 days of inactivity that a closure might be on the horizon. 2. Thanks to multipath payments, most users will have several channels open whether they know it or not, and even active users might have a few idle channels. However, Breeze would close channels based on user activity, not channel activity. Specifically, we would close a user's channel only if they show no activity over any of their channels for at least 45 days. 3. Channel closures due to inactivity are, like many things, both an end and a new beginning. A user whose channels were closed can continue to use Breeze. As soon as they receive their next payment, a new channel will be opened automatically and seamlessly. Closing inactive channels is how we foster growth in our corner of the network. We grow stronger, active users get better functionality, and Lightning gets the liquidity it needs where it's needed. Inbound liquidity is Lightning's wabi-sabi. Wabi-sabi is the Japanese idea that beauty is not the same thing as perfection. Change, growth, and the incompleteness we change and grow out of are part of beauty. Inbound liquidity is beautiful, albeit in a slightly counterintuitive way. It's proof that the network is growing sustainably and in accordance with Bitcoin's principles of decentralization, censorship resistance, openness, and scarcity. An LSP that supplies users with liquidity does not take possession of their money. Like brains and muscles, Lightning will improve as we use it more. As users make payments, rent, coffee, gaming, tips to podcasters, they generate routing fees. Routing fees are a major component of the LSP business model, and they infuse the network with liquidity. As liquidity becomes less scarce, more users join the network, fees drop, payments become even cheaper, and the network flourishes. It's a virtuous cycle that is yet gathering momentum. To feed the network with liquidity, no heroic patches, workarounds, or ad hoc solutions are required. We just have to go about our lives and use Lightning the way it was intended. Okay, let's take a quick break, hit our sponsor, and then I want to talk about the economics of the Lightning Network. The Bitbox O2 hardware wallet is Bitcoin ownership. Too many people make the mistake of thinking that because they bought Bitcoin on an exchange or other service and they show them a balance, that they own that Bitcoin. But not really. It's an IOU. The only way you know you own Bitcoin is by holding your own keys. Only then do you know your account can't be frozen like on Robinhood, or that your funds can't be stolen by a bail-in like in Cyprus, or that you can't move it unless it's a business day or have some other arbitrary withdrawal limit like at the bank. When it's on your Bitbox, it's yours, and no one can do anything to change that. You know, Obama said that using Bitcoin is like having a Swiss bank account in your pocket. Using the Bitbox is like having a Swiss bank vault in your pocket. It's secure, open source, actually Swiss made, and easy to use. The best way to hold the world's most secure digital asset is in a secure digital vault, the Bitbox O2. Check them out at guyswan.com/bitbox. All right, now since we have a lot of new listeners to the show kind of on a regular basis lately, a quick recap for the newbies. Roy does a pretty good job of explaining it in this article of what is the Lightning Network. Just for fun, let's dedicate another couple of minutes just trying to make sense of this. And I really like, personally, I mean, he talks about the abacus and how they're these strings with a certain number of beads on them. And to add or take away any beads off of the string, you have to do an on-chain transaction. But if you're just moving beads back and forth on the string, then it doesn't do anything. You're within the Lightning Network, and that these strings are all over the place, right? Like you have them to, you have one to, you know, somebody else. Then they have one to, you know, some service they use or one of their friends, and they have one on. Like there's just this giant, giant spider web of all sorts of different strings with various amounts of beads on all of them. Now, a way to think about every string, just so you can kind of get a general idea of what a channel is it's it's a location where you can put like that string. The only way you can get beads on or off of that string is with explicit agreement of both people who are involved in it. So if you're holding a string, one side of the string, and I'm holding the other end, the only way we can get more beads on it or more beads off of it is if we both agree to change what's on the string. However, the downfall to that, if that was all that was involved in this agreement, would be that I couldn't get my beads off of it at all without your permission. So I've also got basically a backup plan that says if I don't hear from you in a whole week or 2 days or whatever it is, we actually agree to this before even putting any beads on the string to begin with. If I don't hear from you at all, well, then I automatically can just... I can get my beads specifically off the string in the case that you just, like, you know, something happens, you lose your hard drive or something like that. Like, you're just off the internet or you go missing, blah, blah, blah. So I can always get mine back. It's just there's this window of time that I have to wait because we want updates to happen only with both of our agreements. And then there's always the potential that you will declare to the whole Bitcoin network that you own more beads, that more beads are on your side of the string than on my side. So let's say we start and we've got 100 beads on the string that, you know, we're both holding, and I push 50 beads to you and leave 50 beads on my side, and then you push, 40 beads of those back a little bit later, making a payment. Well, technically, you could broadcast to the Bitcoin network that you have 50 beads because you have a signed agreement between us that in the past, that was the arrangement. You had 50 and I had 50. Now, the proper one is that I have 80 and you have, or excuse me, I have 90 and you have 10. However, the only way you can broadcast is with that backup condition, the one where you have to wait for a week or a couple of days or whatever it is, because I am not going to sign that. And that leads to the other, the only other branch in this contract. So there's three. There's the normal one where everything's going right. That's the string with the beads on it. Then there's the backup plan is if I can't get in touch with you, I can take my beads off of the string and exit and not have to worry about anything. And then there is the insurance policy. And that's if you try to claim more beads than you actually have on your side of the string, I get all the beads. So that's just a breakdown of how the Lightning contract works. And when that contesting thing, like if you try to claim that you own 80 beads on this string and I have a updated transaction that says I own 90, I just get everything because you cheated. And the only way that you can broadcast is if you wait for that whole week or whatever the wait time is, and that's the time that I have to essentially go to the Bitcoin network and say, nah, he's lying, here's my proof, and then I get all of it. So that's why it's non-custodial. That's why when I get a transaction on this network, it's mine, and there's nothing you can do about it, because if you try to claim otherwise, I get all of your coins. So you are very much incentivized to tell the truth. And then these are connected, and we can shoot beads across all of these strings to get to any individual destination or receiver or sender anywhere on the network. We simply have to have a string with enough beads on it. We have to have a path where every string on the paths have enough beads on it. And we can even split it up. So let's say like I've got a whole bunch of beads on my string with you, And you don't have as many beads on your strings, but you have like five. You have five strings, and together there's enough beads. Well, that's referred to as multi-path payments, and Breeze, the Breeze wallet uses this. So this means that rather than having to find one path in which I can send through you onto another string, well, we can just send a little bit on each one of your strings, and each one of them finds their own path to the end destination. And as long as each one has its own path, well, at the end, it can all be put back together into the single large transaction. A way to think about it is imagine like a freighter, like with all this cargo or whatever, going down, you know, a large river. And then that river suddenly breaks into like 20 different streams that are much smaller. Well, rather than trying to fit the whole cargo ship down any one of the streams, which you can't do, you break the cargo ship into 20 even-sized pieces to smaller pieces and send each one of those pieces down each stream. And then the stream come, all the streams come back together at the end, back into another big river, and then you recombine the cargo ship at the other end. And there's, you know, you've gotten your cargo from the receiver or from the start to the destination. So maybe that gives you a slightly better picture of how Lightning works. I don't know. Roy did a pretty good job of explaining it, but it is kind of difficult to wrap your head around. It is a unique thing. But at the end of the day, it's a layer on top of Bitcoin that allows you to send Bitcoin very cheaply and instantly. Because as soon as you hold the contract in which you have this insurance policy in the backup plan and the agreed upon amount that you own, that's it. You're done. You don't have to confirm anything on the blockchain. You've already confirmed it on the blockchain just to open the channel. So it's instant settlement. And because it doesn't require putting a whole bunch of data on chain, like the payment itself actually has no data on chain. So all you need to do is pay for essentially the time for someone else to be holding their string, which in a sense is costless. The only cost is the opportunity cost of that capital elsewhere. Well, then it can be vastly cheaper, particularly if it's an active channel. Every single payment that goes across the channel just makes that channel more and more profitable as time goes on. So after you break through the threshold of it's routed more payments or done more fees than it costs to open the channel, well, then it's just an asset. And if you continue to route payments through that, you know, either way or both ways within the Lightning Network, well, then the longer you keep it open, the more profitable the channel is. Now, there's something else that the Lightning Network does that I think is really, really important that few people realize, and I think is critical to understanding the economics of Lightning and why it's actually a far more sustainable model for payments, and why the liquidity market for Lightning is actually going to be insanely robust. I think Lightning has massive, massive potential because of how it's basically how the economic incentives roll out. So when you look at the Bitcoin base chain, is that the cost of moving Bitcoin is in confirming or basically putting data behind the proof of work. And there's a strict data limit for whether or not, for how to establish security. Like, since decentralization and the ability to reach a massive, like, distributed consensus across the world is critical, well, then it must have a small data footprint, which means the more data, the greater the cost, which means that the actual economic incentives or the cost-demand structure for payments at the base layer is completely irrespective of value. So I could send $1 million payment, like value-wise, like $1 million worth on the base layer, but I send it from one output to one, or excuse me, from one input to one output, like one address to another. Well, then I have an incredibly cheap transaction because this is a small amount of data. However, I could move just $100 that were sent from 100 different addresses in $1 a piece. And suddenly I pay an enormous fee. In fact, like right now with 100 from 100 inputs to one output, I could pay, $50 for a fee right now. Fees are pretty high, and that's a lot of data. So it's got nothing to do with the size of my payment. And that really screws up economic incentives for like from an actual payment and transactional perspective, because what we are securing is data. What we are securing is ownership and signatures. We're not securing amounts per se. The amount is actually completely irrelevant to the transaction or to the security that you're getting with the blockchain. Now, the reason why I think Lightning is such an incredible improvement to the economics of this is that it actually flips that back on its head. It puts that in its proper place. Is that on the Lightning network, the economic incentives for cost are back aligned with the amount of the payment. And that's specifically because it takes data. It requires the data cost to lock funds up into a channel, which, you know, like I hate the term lock up, just because it implies that you can't do anything with it or that it's like a bad thing. So the analogy I like to use is that it's like locking yourself in a car. Yes, you can only go where there are streets. So like I could walk through the woods, but I can't drive through the woods. So I am limited to where there are highways and where there are roads, but I can get a vast number of places, and basically anywhere interesting or that I'm likely to want to go far easier and more efficiently by getting in a car, by locking myself in a car, because the roadways and the very mechanism of a car is designed to make it so I can move very quickly and to places that I need to go. That's what Lightning Network is. That's how you think about quote unquote locking coins into the Lightning Network. But because of that, the actual initiation, the initial connection into the Lightning Network is the only part that has that data cost issue. Whereas while you're on the Lightning Network, suddenly the economic incentives are back aligned with the amount of the payment because the amount of liquidity available needs to either basically facilitate many, many small payments or one large payment. So any large payment needs to be able to fund or pay for roughly the same amount of fees or more than the many, many small payments. So in a sense, like when you're looking at on-chain, the incredibly wealthy players almost like have an economic free ride for anybody doing smaller transactions. The larger the transaction you can make, the more you benefit from the Bitcoin base layer, whereas the exact opposite economic incentives are set up in the Lightning Network. The smaller payment you can make on the Lightning Network, the more you benefit. And of course, the wealthy players, the wealthy people who are using up a lot of the liquidity and making huge payments are the ones that actually fund and really pay for Lightning. And that's why I think microtransactions actually will continue to work on Lightning, because they'll mostly be inconsequential because they don't eat up a lot of liquidity. So it may actually be that even though fees will eventually rise on the Lightning Network because of use and because of this inherent liquidity demand, the transaction fees for 100 sat payments may remain at 1 sat or essentially free, because it's also not a liquidity problem. You'll always be able to do a 100 sat payment, and they could, you know, somebody could do 1,100 sat payments before it even becomes like a minor issue as to, eating up any sort of liquidity anywhere. So because of that, Lightning Network still works with microtransactions, even as liquidity becomes like a really big hurdle and demand really spikes. Or at least like kind of in my thinking, we'll kind of see how that plays out. I mean, just think about it in like Breeze's perspective. Like Breeze, I have a wallet right now that I think probably there's, $300 or $400 worth of inbound liquidity on Breeze's side of my channels. And I use mine pretty regularly, But, you know, I do it in like $40 or $50 increments, sometimes $100. Like I don't do a lot of tiny payments, but if I did a lot of tiny payments, it doesn't cost them anything extra. Like if I did, you know, 200, like 50 sat payments over the month, that wouldn't be consequential to them because it's about how much inbound liquidity they have locked up. It's far more significant or far larger problem if I have, you know, $2,000 worth of inbound liquidity and I'm doing a whole bunch of 10 sat or 50 sat payments versus I have $10 of inbound liquidity and I'm doing a bunch of 10 sat or 50 sat payments. Like the difference between having $2,000 locked up in inbound liquidity versus $10 in inbound liquidity is a million times more consequential and the far more important factor than whether or not I'm doing a bunch of 50 sat payments. So that's why I actually think Lightning Network is, as long as the technology works, which it clearly does, and I use it all the freaking time, the economic incentives are perfectly aligned to create an incredibly robust market. And the most important takeaway from this article, and something that is so difficult to explain to skeptics and people who are constantly like, Lightning doesn't work because there's a liquidity problem, is the nature of the liquidity problem on Lightning. It's not an engineering problem. It is literally not something that developers can solve. It has nothing to do with making Lightning work. It's a market problem. Essentially, liquidity is the entire purpose of the financial system. It is, how do we connect those who have capital with those who need capital? And how do we effectively move that capital around as efficiently as possible? Period. That is why the entire global financial industry exists. That's the fundamental purpose of finance. The Lightning Network and inbound liquidity is just a novel application and novel network for a new market. That's why inbound liquidity is such a problem right now, because the inbound liquidity isn't the problem. It's the fact that it's a foundation for a new market that's yet to be properly established. But for those players who realize how to effectively allocate liquidity for that, there's staggering profit to be made because there's a financial network to be built on top of this, a new global financial system. So just like the example of Strike, if somebody doesn't know about Strike, you got to go to just at LN_Strike on Twitter and just watch some of the videos. But we've talked about it heavily on the podcast. Actually yesterday's episode or the day before yesterday, talking about Bitcoin Begins. This is the chapter 2 of Bitcoin Beginning. It has the potential to obliterate payments networks, the import-export markets, all remittance services, the Forex markets. Like, we're talking about something that if someone can find the proper way to profitably allocate this liquidity, the market reward for doing so is astronomical. And the driver for needing to solve that problem is the demand for Bitcoin the asset. This is where the underlying need for liquidity and a payments network and for settling payments and quick transfer of the value in Bitcoin, it's exactly where it comes from. The same way that demand for US dollars as payment supports a global drive, a global demand for dollar-denominated payments networks, for remittance services, for contractual agreements and debt obligations and everything else. Like, the demand for the dollar as a means of settlement is what creates the global financial system. That is the economic incentive. So to claim that just because Lightning is novel and it doesn't have a market, well, it does have a market, but it doesn't have a market as large enough as the dollar's global financial system on top of it, that the economic incentive, the very same one that allowed the global financial system to exist in the first place, to be built out, that economic incentive is not strong enough to do the same on Lightning, when at the exact same time, demand for Bitcoin the asset is ridiculous. I mean, if you're looking at anything in the Bitcoin space right now and you're not stupidly bullish, you're not looking. And you know, another analogy to think about this, another way to think about this is just look at Bitcoin. Look at liquidity for Bitcoin. The exchange markets, the liquidity in China and Europe, and the ability to quickly change between, like, go back to the Strike example, the ability to quickly swap between US dollars and euros with Bitcoin, that requires huge liquid markets for Bitcoin. Like, there wasn't anything the developers could do per se to make it so that, you know, Binance in the UK and Coinbase in the US had enough liquidity for MicroStrategy to buy $1 billion worth of money, worth of Bitcoin, without moving the market. That's not a developer problem, right? They can build tools and make Bitcoin interesting and make it so that you can hold your keys easier, and that makes it more likely for exchanges to come on board and adopt Bitcoin the asset. But the developers can't, like, tweak the code and suddenly make liquidity appear. That's a market problem. I mean, that is what a financial market is. That's why it exists. So the natural maturation, the natural process of maturity for the market is the only thing that can solve the liquidity problem, that makes it so that MicroStrategy can buy $1.1 billion worth of Bitcoin without making the market quadruple in the very time that they're trying to do it. It makes the asset basically legitimate and liquid enough that they can actually pull that off. And for Elon to randomly buy $1.5 billion worth, again, without sending the price to the moon. If it's illiquid, they just can't do that. It cannot serve its role as an asset for that scale of a market without the liquidity. There's no cheat code for that. It's just growth combined with economic incentives, and it just takes time. Engineering can only help this by providing better tools. Lightning is a tool for Bitcoin the asset, but the demand for Bitcoin the asset is and will be the driving economic force for liquidity on the Lightning network. It is literally just a matter of time and proper economic incentives, which I feel like I've outlined and Roy outlined. Those are very much aligned. The problem that the market has to figure out is the monetization model, because it's an entirely new network and an entirely new set of tools with a new asset class, and none of the current monetization models of the financial system directly apply. All of those are custodial models. All of those are based on walled gardens and licenses and roping users in with KYC AML. Like, they are built for a dollar system. We can't just copy and paste those onto Lightning and think they're going to work. Lightning is a unique network with a unique set of incentives. So we need to figure out how to monetize that network specifically. That's the market problem, monetization. But luckily, it's the demand for Bitcoin the asset that drives the market to find this solution. So to say that this is a problem, or that because it's not 100% solved, or it's still in the bootstrapping phase or whatever it is, and that this can't be solved, that Lightning won't solve this problem, is essentially to argue that markets can't do the very thing, the axiomatic thing that they exist for, which is to find a profitable way to satisfy demand. Now, Roy in this article goes through three different models that are basically in use right now. The Sphinx model, which you pay an ongoing fee for, you even pay for the node itself because they're like hosting it for you. Well, you can host it yourself. Mine right now is being hosted and I'm paying for liquidity. And I can do the same thing with BitRefill. You can purchase liquidity at a set amount of time. But, you know, the prices are iffy because they have a set price, whereas it makes more sense that you would have bid and ask, right? Like you'd have an ongoing market for liquidity because there's a time where I might need that channel and there's a time where I might not need that channel. It's not important. And then of course, as Roy points out, is that the inbound liquidity is really the problem. So I could have a channel with bit refill and pay to have a $2,000 channel open, then receive a $1,980 payment. Now, Bitrefill's not on the hook for anything. So, like, if I pay for a set amount of time, but immediately fill up the channel on my time, or on my side, excuse me, I only needed it for, like, it doesn't reallocate. Like, my price doesn't adjust when I didn't need it, but for that minute, right? Like, I'm still just paying for the length of time Bitrefill opens the channel. But as Roy points out, it's about what value they have to leave inside the channel that they own, that is the opportunity cost at hand. If I own everything in the channel, they have zero opportunity cost. So the underlying issue is, how do we find and develop a market price for inbound liquidity, and one that can adjust properly and quickly enough to account for changes in that liquidity? Luckily, that's exactly what markets are great at doing. Now, even though Roy talks about in this piece that the Lightning Pool option, which is basically a non-custodial, like it's a service, that it's kind of like an exchange almost, really, that basically matches somebody who has extra Bitcoin or liquidity lying around and someone who needs it to receive payments, let's say for, you know, a merchant or a service, like let's say Apple, you know, they want to sell a whole bunch of computers and, you know, they want to make money, so they don't have all the money already to put into channels that they want to receive. They need other people to upfront channels. They need other people to upfront liquidity so that they can earn that money. Well, Lightning Pool is a way to essentially match it. Apple says, we're willing to purchase $1 million worth of liquidity, and we'll pay a 1% fee over 2 months or something like that as we release this new product or something like that, whatever. We'll pay everybody who opens up the channels with us that 1% fee. And this is done without actually having to trust Apple and without having to trust Lightning Pool, which is the one that gives a blind auction. We actually don't know what Apple is offering, and they don't know what our quote-unquote minimum acceptance is. They just, it's a blind auction, and the lowest common denominator matches. So if I say I'm willing to accept anything above 0.5%, and then Apple proposes they pay 1%, well, then, boom, my liquidity goes to them. And for the next month, I make that fee. And then for the next month, that liquidity is locked up with Apple so that they can release their new product and make money. Now, I think that's a critical point in establishing, like, a market price. That's an interest rate. Like this is absolutely critical. This is the time value of Bitcoin. Hat tip, Nick Bhatia, on that one. This is the ability to create a price of, or a cost of time for liquidity. But I think at the end, you know, Roy's still actually right in the slight oddity in the dynamics there, is that, again, like, what if Apple thinks they're going to sell $1 million of this in the first, you know, month or something like that, and instead they sell $1 million of it in the first 2 hours? Well, then now they've got to pay for more liquidity because I'm no longer on the hook with any of it. All of the value is on their side. They paid for a month. They paid a full percent, and they only needed it for 2 weeks, or excuse me, for 2 hours. Now, in this situation, there's like a couple of different things they could do. They could try to pay for additional liquidity, and, you know, go back to the Lightning Pool market and get more channels opened, or they could quote unquote loop out. They could send Lightning transactions back out to a different service provider who then sends them money on chain. So they can basically empty their channel and, you know, stick that away in their coffers or in their savings in their treasury, And now the liquidity is back all on my side and they can receive another $1 million. And then they can just do that in $1 million increments over and over and over again. But again, you need a highly liquid market for the swaps to somebody to receive Lightning payments and then send on-chain Bitcoin in response to it. And I think that market is likely driven by the third model, the routing fees. And, you know, Roy has a point that, you know, right, routing fees right now, like if you look at it, routing fees do not pay for this. Routing fees are very tiny. I mean, if you just look at my node, like I haven't really said anything. I do have a, like, there's like a thing that if anybody sends over 1 million sats through one of my channels, mine will charge, I think, like 1,000 sats just for sending a payment that big through it. So I do make a little bit of a fee, but I think I'm pretty sure I'm just like 1 sat for a payment right now. So anything below 1 million, I would like to just be able to set a, you know, 0.1% fee or even like a 0.05% fee and just like set it at that. Because, you know, if somebody sent 10 sats, it would essentially be free. Because I would get paid quote unquote millisats, which you can't really settle in. Regardless is that I might actually still make something off 100,000 sat payments and million sat payments. But there's not a way to set percent yet, or at least not in any of the tools I'm using. But I expect that to kind of be common going forward. But I think at the end of the day, the fee structure for routing fees really does make the most sense. It will just be difficult to, I think there needs to be an additional solution to really figure out how those fees are broadcast or allocated, because we're sort of in this bizarre, kind of like Bitcoin, this mempool fee where everybody just kind of yells out what their fee is every time, or I guess not really. It's more of like you ping and request their fee details. You know, your node makes a decision based on who has a route and the subsequent fees with potential routes. I think there's a significant market opportunity to find new tools or new ways to set up fee structures in that way. But I think that's the ultimate end, is the most sustainable or the most fundamental way that this will continue to work is with a solid routing fee structure. And I don't think that at all misaligns the Lightning Network with microtransactions. In fact, I think that's exactly what will allow microtransactions to continue to be a big part of Lightning Network going forward. But we just don't know, kind of at this point, the one drawback to microtransactions is spam. Is, you know, what if I get a whole bunch of transactions that like somebody just locks up and doesn't worry about losing, or they spam my node with 1 million transactions of one Satoshi a piece. Like that's the one area where as soon as you get low enough value, is that it could cause more damage than it makes sense to actually facilitate the transaction itself. But regardless, we'll find all that out as things unravel. And I think Breeze has an awesome, awesome model. I'm a huge fan of that wallet. The two wallets that I use more than anything, I connect my Zap to BTC Pay server. So that's kind of the Lightning wallet that I have with a crap ton of liquidity. I use it for, you know, donations and stuff for like everybody who's donating to like be a part of the Audionauts crew. If you like donate on guyswan.com, that goes straight to my BTC Pay server. And I hope to be selling, you know, merch and things like that in the future. And, you know, that's why it's there. Like, BTC Pay is my all to like hub for Lightning. But then my quote unquote mobile wallet that I love is Breeze. It has a lower capacity, but it just works seamlessly. I don't have to manage channels with that thing. It just goes. If I receive a payment that I don't have inbound liquidity for, it just opens up a new channel and immediately forwards me the payment. And I don't see anything. It's just completely in the background. Those are the things that developers can build, the tools for automatically making this stuff work on the back end. And then they, as the Lightning Service Provider, LSP, manage all the liquidity. They make sure that, you know, I'm profitable to keep channels open with, and I just keep using my wallet. And of course, for anything else I'm doing, like if I'm doing a swap out to savings or whatever, I'm using my Bitbox, who is our sponsor, and a shout out to those guys for supporting Bitcoin Audible. And of course, to our other sponsor, Level.co, that offers mobile banking services in Bitcoin. And, you know, if you took advantage of this stuff, and, you know, you got on Lightning with Breeze Wallet, you set up your mobile banking services with Level.co, and then you use, like, your Bitbox hardware wallet for your cold storage, you could literally do your whole, like, you could just go full Bitcoin. And basically, the only thing I'm missing in my setup is Level.co because they're not available in North Carolina yet. But we're getting there. Like, it's really happening, guys. We're about to have, like, the pieces are coming in place for an entirely Bitcoin-denominated financial system, and that you can live entirely off of Bitcoin. And it won't require the 200 different workarounds that I've been trying to band-aid together for the last 3 or 4 years to actually do this. I loved this article. It's really great. I love the concept of kind of the economics behind this and like how inbound liquidity is going to be solved in the long run and why it's just a matter of time and maturation of the market. And I think there's so much potential in Lightning going forward, man, it's just going to be amazing. So with that, let's close this out. This is Bitcoin Audible. And until next time, everybody, have an awesome weekend and take it easy, guys. This has been a 111 production. And you were listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.